like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Christoph Cox, co-founder and CEO of Apopo, a Tanzania-based nonprofit that trains giant African pouched rats to detect landmines and trains other giant African pouched rats to detect tuberculosis. To borrow the words of Dave Barry, I'm not making this up. Indeed, this is a very serious organization celebrating its 20th anniversary, and over the course of those two decades, these aforementioned rats have detected over 100,000 landmines, rendering safe vast parcels of land across numerous communities in multiple countries, while their rodent colleagues have identified more than 12,000 tuberculosis infections that were missed by clinics, that is, by conventional medical means to diagnose the disease. In a conversation recorded last week, Cox and I discussed Apopo's beginnings, including the initial idea of training these rats to look for and detect landmines, how Apopo may be somewhat esoteric globally, yet it's an important and well-known presence in a number of countries, a bit about the training of these rats for their respective tasks, and some details about the rats themselves. We'll hear those things and more when I play back my conversation with Christoph Cox in a moment here on Talking Animals. Later in the show, in the Comedy Corner, we'll feature a brand new piece by the venerable and downright great Dana Gould, a rat-related Name That Animal tune by a seminal rock band, and more. And today, by the way, we'll ask for your guesses on Name That Animal tune by email rather than our customary phone calls, but that's again later on. Right now, let's get to the interview about rats and other topics with Christoph Cox. I should note that there were some technological challenges in connecting with Christoph between Florida and Tanzania, resulting in a few moments here and there that presented maybe less than stellar audio quality. But lean in, and you can certainly discern most, if not all, of the conversation quite readily. Indeed, let's hear it now. Recorded last Monday, and speaking from Tanzania, this is Christoph Cox on Talking Animals.
Thanks for having me.
So at this point, as a recent initiate to Apopo, I'd like to start by asking something about where you view Apopo globally. Like, the organization is on the cusp of its 20th anniversary, yet I think it's safe to say most people, including many people deeply plugged into animal organizations of all kinds, may be unaware of Apopo. How do you view that observation?
Well, currently we are working on all sides of the world. We are having a successful demining operation in Cambodia in the Far East, where we moved to like 3-4 years ago. Initially, we started off in Africa, where we are present in Tanzania, of course, Mozambique, Angola, starting up in Zimbabwe, and starting up in Ethiopia now. And we also hope to contribute to the demining in Colombia, which is one of our newest initiatives.
You're moving into Colombia shortly?
Well, we have already a manager in place for 1.5 years who is taking it up with the Colombian government to allow us to have mine detection rats in the country. It's a bit of a long and bureaucratic verification process, we hope to get through that and start up soon. Now, with the recent peace agreements with the FARC, most demining operations are getting geared up to help the country demining.
Yeah.
And it is one of the biggest rates of casualties in the world at the moment.
Wow. So with Colombia now, how many countries is Apopo operating in currently?
Well, we are in Colombia. We are in that's in preparation phase. Zimbabwe is in preparation phase, and full operationally we are now in Angola, Tanzania, Mozambique, and Cambodia. Mm-hmm. And Ethiopia, we are starting this month. We have just finished building a medical facility there for our TB detection rats, and we've just obtained the export permit, so our rats will be flying hopefully this month to Ethiopia.
Okay. So I guess what is more the case then, based on what I said initially at the conversation, is that there are huge pockets, huge areas that are quite familiar with Opopo and Opopo's work, and yet other probably sizable regions or pockets that are not yet familiar with Opopo.
Right. At the moment, of course, there are, in terms of mine action, there are about plus 50 countries still which have a landmine problem. Of course, not all countries are suitable for us to work in. Sometimes the scope of the problem is UXOs or small, or maybe the security situation is not good. On the TB side, there are like 30 high burden countries. So there's, of course, a vast room for expansion, and there's also interest from different countries.
Sure. I think regarding the people and regions and countries that are maybe still just becoming acquainted with the Opopo, I think when they hear about your work for the very first time, I mean, they could be excused for finding it a bit improbable. Like, so let me get this straight. There are these huge rats that are used to detect landmines. And then just when someone might say, come on, that's a little hard to accept, to swallow, then it gets mentioned that a different group of the same rats are trained to detect tuberculosis. So, I mean, if you just kind of come into it new, it seems kind of improbable.
Yeah, that might be so. Even in the industry, there's still a lot of skepticism. But we hope to get beyond that, because we have now, for example, during the last year, gotten some very good external evaluations. We, like, for example, in Cambodia, we have been the Cambodia Mine Action Center, a very big local demining NGO employing thousands of people. Before we brought in the rats, they were suspicious. So they have trialed us on the field for 3 months with 100% quality control. Every indication of the rats was verified with metal detectors. And the remainder 9 months of the year, 25% quality control, and they didn't find any missed mine. In addition to that, they found a big cost reduction for doing comparing the same work if it would have been done by mine detection rat teams in combination with metal detectors or purely manual deminers with metal detectors.
Well, so I think actually before we get too much further into our conversation, I mean, I know about told this story countless times over the past, I guess, nearly 20 years. But if you'll indulge me, maybe you could just tell me a bit about Bart and how this whole enterprise began.
Well, me and Bart, we were schoolmates, basically, at the industrial design school. And I took off to Africa to do my social service instead of, which was an alternative to military duty. And while I was for 3 years in Kenya, Bart supported me in doing some small fundraising in Belgium to support our project in Kenya. In the process, we set up a small non-for-profit in Belgium to entertain that. And meanwhile, in Belgium, Bart started with the idea of landmine detection and doing something about the landmine problem. And he immediately came to the point that, of course, detection is the most difficult part and the most time-consuming and expensive part. But that was interesting. That was the time before the internet. So we were writing letters to each other every 2-3 times per week. And I would have to drive 30 kilometers to the post box to get my letter. Then he sent me that first letter like, oh, I'm going to train rats to detect landmines. And I thought, well, maybe he had a good night out yesterday. But here we are now. When I got back to Belgium after Kenya, very soon thereafter, we got our first support from the Belgian government at the time. And that's when we took off, first November 1997.
So, actually, let me just let folks know who might be tuning in now. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Christoph Cox, the co-founder and CEO of Opopo, a Tanzania-based nonprofit that trains African giant pouched rats to detect landmines and to detect tuberculosis. This interview was recorded last week. So, it sounds like, Christoph, that there was support from the Belgian government early on. But I would think that also early on, just by the very nature of the enterprise, that there must have been some serious challenges, including some naysayers.
Sorry, I didn't understand that last.
Well, I just, meaning people who kind of doubted the very goal or nature of this idea that Bart had, and then having you kind of help him execute. I mean, just on the face of it, the idea that, okay, here, I'm going to train these rats and they're going to detect landmines. I mean, now, 20 years later, of course, you have a demonstrated track record, but I just mean early on, there must have been skepticism or other sort of doubts expressed rather regularly, I would think.
Oh, yes. Initially, the idea was a bit ridiculed within the industry, and up to date, it is sometimes still ridiculed. I remember in the early days, there was the Geneva International Center for Humanitarian Demining, which after a first test of demining dogs, which were not, the results were not so good, they brought all the training companies together which trained demining dogs to develop this concept technically and to make sound standards and all that. So we participated from the second meeting, and in fact, together with the dog community, we developed a standard, and we did a lot of chemistry, behavioral research and all this. But we were the only group in that community which took the animal training from a more pragmatic, scientific perspective, as compared to the dog trainers at that time, which all had their own tricks and almost like magic. So we have been constantly publishing as much as we can. Up to today, we try to combine our operational deployment with research and further developments.
As you're talking about the work alongside dogs at a certain point, I'd be very interested to hear about the training of the rats who detect the landmines. I mean, I'm guessing it must be a fairly intricate process.
Well, the training of rats, we have currently quite established SOPs for that. So we do the breeding in-house. Then after 4 weeks, we daily take the rats from the litter, and we start socializing them. That takes a few weeks to make them used to all sounds and surfaces and noises, and putting them in a car that they're not afraid in later life. A few weeks later, we go on with the clicker association with food, which means click, food, so the rat learns the association. After that, we start now learning, teaching the rat that it has to do something in order to get the click and the food. So it has to walk on a small soil surface and identify some TNT target. If it approaches the TNT target and stays there, it will get a click and a reward. The next step is that we put negative targets in between, and gradually we build up. Then they go on bigger surfaces. Then they are transported to our minefield. We have a well-established minefield here with over 1,500 explosive targets in the ground. Initially, they start on small surfaces with shallow mines, and we develop that until at about 9 months of training. Then we do accreditation tests, which implies that the rat has to search 400 square meters. This is the International Mine Action Standard test, but internally we go up to 800 square meters. And the boxes typically contain between 1 to 4 mines per 100 square meters. And the rat is not allowed to miss any mine and can have a maximum of 2 false indications per 100 square meter box. Once they pass that test, they are exported to the country of deployment, where again they will get an external accreditation test by the national authorities. And once they accomplish that, they are accredited as a full mine detector. At that stage, then, we still use 2 animals to search an area to be sure of 100%.
Not surprising, I guess. That's fairly involved. And it sounds like, as you're describing it, that there's more than a few parallels to the kind of training that, say, dogs would undergo with, the clicker training and expanding the scope of where they're looking and where they're locating the landmines. First of all, does each rat have a handler?
Each rat has a handler, yes. And normally that person remains the same during the training process, but then they are not so much attached to a personal handler as compared to dogs.
Okay.
Also, for example, when our people take leave or holidays, their rats will be taken over by one of their colleagues.
Sure.
If they go abroad again, they will meet other trainers there. So the rats kind of work a bit more mechanical, if I can say that, or repetitive tasking, working for their food, as compared to dogs, where affection is much more important.
Right.
Not to say that our handlers are not very affectious with our rats. They love the rats and they love cuddling them. And if they're released from the leash, you see the rat just walking behind the trainer back into its cage, free from a leash.
How do they signal to their handler that they have located a landmine?
Oh, they will pause and scratch gently on the surface. Sometimes you see them standing up, you know, sniffing where the plume comes from, but then they will pinpoint on the ground by gentle scratching. And of course, they're too light to set off a landmine, so that's no problem.
So there's never, because of their weight, there's never any prospect of a rat triggering the detonation of that landmine?
No, that is extremely unlikely and has never happened.
It's never happened in your 20 years so far?
Never.
Wow, okay. Yeah, that's great, because again, people that are maybe just hearing about this or learning about this, I'm sure that'd be a natural first concern, just as it is sometimes when other animals are deployed to detect any kind of either landmine or other explosives. What's the risk of them obviously being harmed or even killed in that operation? So it sounds like that's not a risk here. So what would an African giant pouch rat be doing if they weren't working for or with a popo? In other words, what are they like when they're either in the wild, or I don't know if they're also sometimes people's pets just in a different scenario? What? Tell me a little bit more about these rats just ordinarily.
Well, they can be found in most sub-Saharan African, let's say in the whole middle of Africa, but from West Africa to East Africa, not in very south, not in South Africa. And they typically live underground. They have burrows underground where they collect a lot of food, but they also collect a lot of shiny things. You find bottle dops and stuff in their burrows. They are night animals, so during daytime they're underground. So at night you see them sometimes crossing the street or so. They're easily recognizable with their big tail, mostly going up with the pink end of the tail. And you also find them a lot, for example, around the local food market where there's a lot of food availability. That's where they will try to go at night, you know. So they do some limited damage to crops like maize and fruits and stuff.
When they're out and naturally roaming around, what predators do they have?
Dogs. Dogs are their main predators.
That's it? Yeah, okay. But typically, if I'm not mistaken, as I think you touched on before, for the rats that do the work with the popo, they are specifically bred for that work. Is that correct?
That's right. Because we have tried a few times to if people sometimes come here because they know we have rats, some of the local people come here, try to sell us rats. And it happened that we bought some few young rats and tried to train them. But the success rate of those, let's say, wild-born rats is not as good as our own breeding. Because from the very beginning, they get used to this environment, they are better socialized than ever. And we are still trying to improve our breeding program to see if we can, pair the best rats. We are planning now to see if we can, early exposure can have an impact, for example, when the rat is newly born, to put a scent of explosives or TB in the cage and see if that has an effect. If that could maybe at a later stage cause some epigenetic changes into the rats in order to improve our breeding line.
Wow. So it sounds like, I mean, at first I was thinking that it sounds like somewhat parallel to the way that, for example, guide dogs often are specifically bred for that purpose as opposed to being, say, rescue dogs or dogs from shelters. And it sounds like the same idea really holds here for the rats, but even maybe more so that there's a very scientific element that's being introduced as the breeding continues over the years.
Yeah, but we haven't gotten really to that stage to have that performing lines. It's something we want to start trying now. And of course, if you compare with dogs, there's so many dog breeds. There's such a high variability between the dog's characters of the specific breed that this applies more to dogs than with rats. So I would say it's maybe a bit more difficult for us to reach to that stage, but we're trying.
So you mentioned that sometimes people bring you rats or try to sell you rats. I mean, have there been any rats that you've used, maybe earlier on, this may be more likely, that weren't the product of the breeding program, where someone, you found a rat or someone had a rat or you thought, well, you know what, this one seems to maybe be a good candidate for the kind of work that we do?
No, it's only once when we tried. I think at that time our breeding process was not going so well, so we decided to get some of those small rats from the wild. But the success in training those was not so good, so we gave up on that.
So how many rats total are there within the Popo operation?
Oh, there must be around 300, which includes our breeding colony, which includes our operational rats in Angola, in Cambodia, and in Mozambique, and in Tanzania. It also includes some rats which we are using to identify new tasks, some rats which we are trying to develop some new training protocols on, for purely for research and development. So all together around 300.
And what is their typical lifespan?
The typical lifespan is up to 8 years.
I see. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Christoph Cox, the founder of Popo, a nearly 20-year-old Tanzania-based organization that trains African giant pouched rats to detect landmines and to detect tuberculosis. This interview was recorded last week. So, yeah, the other main project, really, I'd say, for the rats is the detection of tuberculosis, which you've alluded to. But at what point in the existence of Popo did someone say, hey, okay, we're working with these rats to detect landmines, but how about the idea, I've got this idea that maybe they could be trained also separately to detect tuberculosis? I mean, how was that discovery made?
Well, it was again my colleague Bart Regens who came up with the idea, and due to the long-term collaboration of our University of Antwerp with the University of Agriculture here in Tanzania, we happened to get based in Tanzania. But there are no landmines in Tanzania, but there is a big tuberculosis problem. Tanzania is one of the TB high burden countries.
Mm.
And of course, knowing that everything has a smell, and TB, in the old days, doctors sometimes used to diagnose TB based on smell. There's some anecdotal evidence of it. So he basically started with a local hospital collecting some samples and applying some of the same training methods which we had. And we found out that the rats could fairly quickly differentiate TB positive sputum samples from TB negative sputum samples. And then we further developed this idea. We were happy to win the World Bank Development Competition, which was a competition between 2,000 social entrepreneurial ideas, and they gave our first grant to establish our facility. And then we started collaborating with a number of hospitals. And at the moment, we have expanded this collaboration in Tanzania to 57 hospitals, having over 15 hospitals in Mozambique. And now this and next year, we'll start working with up to 50 hospitals again in Ethiopia.
So obviously, they're very successful at this. Is there a accuracy rate for the rats that is compared to other means to find or diagnose tuberculosis?
Yes, it's a bit of a trade-off. So we use a number of rats to go over the samples, and what we do is we collect the samples which have already been diagnosed by microscopy. Microscopy typically misses 50% of the sample, of the positive samples. For HIV co-infected patients, the accuracy of microscopy is only up to 25%. So if we collect, at the end of the day, we collect all the samples the hospitals have been analyzing, and we let the rats go over it again. And we have the known positives from the hospital on which we reward the rats. But then, of course, 85% of the samples which come into our Popo are considered as hospital negative sample. When the rat indicates those samples, because we are not an accredited technology yet, we will examine those samples with more precise techniques, which would be too expensive to apply on all samples. And that is how we find those additional patients. So up to date, using that method, we have identified more than 11,000 TB patients already, which were missed in the hospitals, which were told that had TB negative, but which were then discovered by the rats.
Just to make sure I'm clear on that, so the 11,000 tuberculosis patients that the rats have identified, those were identified from samples that initially registering as negative, in other words, that those patients did not have TB.
Do I
have?
Exactly.
So I guess there sounds like they're working kind of in a team effort here. Clearly, I guess the rats ultimately in those cases are more accurate than the conventional means to diagnose.
Well, they're not necessarily more accurate. And also, we do not know sometimes when a rat indicates the sample, but then the confirmation technology says it is negative. We consider this as a false positive indication. But now, in the next year, we'll start a study to follow up those patients which were indicated by the rat, but then the confirmation technology was said they are negative. So we try to collaborate with the existing technologies because there's a new product on the market which is called the Gene Expert, which is quite accurate, but still misses samples as well. And I think the main quality of the rats is that big throughput. You know, this Gene Expert machine, one machine can operate up to 20 samples per day, while the rats do 100 samples in 15 minutes. So therefore, one rat unit can easily re-evaluate the samples of a big city like Dar es Salaam, which is 4 million inhabitants.
Wow. So just to make sure I'm clear, so what you're saying is like in any kind of testing, that the more conventional testing, there could be false positives, just as there could be negatives, I guess, that would maybe not be accurate. So in the same way, the rats, when you're saying they're not necessarily more accurate, but they are finding patients who do have TB amongst the large now bath of people who initially were diagnosed as negative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we collaborate with the other technologies because our reps come mostly after the microscopy evaluation, which is done in the dots clinics. And then after the rats, we use Gene Expert, or we centrifuge the sample and do it again, what we call pre-concentrated microscopy, which is more accurate than the normal microscopy. But then again, there's another big task beyond that, which is to trace all those patients which were initially told you are negative. You know, and then initially we were doing this evaluation and it took some days before the results got back to the hospital. Now we have built a facility in Dar es Salaam and we try to return the results within 24 hours. So in fact, when the hospitals are done in the afternoon, we collect the sample and we work night shift so that when the patients come back in the morning, we try to have our results there as good as possible. And then we employ quite a big group of community volunteers in Tanzania, which is a group of ex-TB patients, which will then try to follow up these patients, bring them in for treatment, and also try to monitor the adherence of the treatment.
So as we're talking here, Christoph, I mean, I can't help wondering, and I'm sure it's been raised numerous times, but if they are obviously so adept at detecting tuberculosis, to, I guess, draw another parallel to some of the skills that are drawn on for dogs, I mean, are there other medical purposes that people, that you and your colleagues at Apopo have considered for the rats? For example, again, there are dogs that are used in some cases to detect cancer. And I'm just wondering if with the rats having such the, in this case at least, clearly refined and accurate sense of smell, are there other purposes that they could be implemented for as well medically?
I think they could, and we sometimes get interest from various research groups, like there's interest in detecting bovine TB. There's interest project which will start next year to detect brucellosis, which is a very contagious disease found in raw milk. And of course, cancer. The bottleneck for us mostly is to get enough big volume of samples with a reliable known status, because once you train up the rat, that training has to be maintained during its lifetime. In the case of TB, we collect hundreds and hundreds of samples per day, with some of the samples, let's say 10%, has a known positive status. So we can use those samples to reward the rat, keep the rat trained, to keep the rat motivated. That's sometimes the problem with cancer. Like, for example, there's a big problem in the early detection of lung cancer. But for a sample to be reliable enough, you basically need a CT scan verified sample. And they are not so plenty available, right? So we depend on this large volume of samples. That's one of the bottlenecks. But we have recently published a kind of meta study where we compared all the different studies which were undertaken by using animals for detection of disease. Because most of the studies were dogs and cancers, and we've tried kind of to advise on good practices and less good practices. But some of the studies are outstanding. Others are maybe not so good.
Yeah. And do these rats, I don't know how long they're exposed to the samples, what kind of risk is there for them to become ill during the course of this sort of work?
Yeah, when we started, we inoculated the rats with TB, and none of the animals got sick. But in addition to that, and that is to protect our workers and the rats, when the active sputa sample come in, we decontaminate them in an autoclave or inactivate them in an autoclave by putting them in there for more than half an hour at boiling point. So as such, the samples are inactivated and don't form a risk for the animals.
I see. Okay.
We haven't had any rats contracting TB.
Okay. Well, that's good. That seems like for doing that kind of work, that they should hopefully be protected from that. So we're just in our final moments here, Christoph. So, you know, anytime a person or an entity organization approaches a major anniversary, as Apopo is doing, it often prompts both sort of looking back and looking ahead. So as you and others at Apopo look to the future, what are three or four of the main things that you see, whether it's branching into other areas? Obviously, I guess there's an expansion of territories. What's most paramount to you as you guys move into the next year and years beyond?
Well, we hope that we can create more partnerships. For example, in the field of mine action, we are a very, very small player compared to some of the 5-6 big global demining NGOs.
Mm-hmm.
We are currently trialing with one of the biggest demining NGOs. And if they become happy that they will kind of use our services. So far, we have been mostly running the operations ourselves, but we would prefer that we only concentrate on the rat and, by way of speaking, lease them out to the other organizations which are interested in them. Same for TB, our 3TB detection projects, which we are running now. Of course, we are running them in collaboration with government institutions and all that, but we would prefer to kind of lease them out and focus on our core activity in order to increase our impact.
Mm-hmm. And how currently, at least, how is Apopo funded? Sounds like there's a lot of work, a lot of resources, a lot of people and equipment, and there must be considerable expenses. How do you have grants? Do you have other sources of funding?
Well, it's a combination of government grants, foundations, research grants, and more and more we get generous support from the public. They support us mainly through adopting a rat. So we have a rat up for adoption, and that even makes a good Christmas gift. And so we are trying to bring together all those resources. But funding is a challenge because generally, globally, the funding for demining is going down. TB is a huge, huge problem. So the global community would like to end the landmine problem as agreed under the Ottawa Treaty by 2025. And I think we have come to a stage whereby there's light at the end of the tunnel. You know, when we started, people were saying, oh, there's another 500 years work to remove all the landmines. That is not true. If the current funding levels remain, I'm convinced that in the next 10 to 15 years, we can get rid of the landmine problem globally. In terms of TB, the World Health Organization is looking at reducing the TB burden by 90% by 2030, but that will even be a bigger challenge.
No, I would think that's inherently going to be more difficult just because landmines, as people work more and more over the years in broader areas to detect them and remove them, just gradually it seems like that problem would dissipate, but the TB challenge seems much larger and much more daunting. So we should mention to folks listening that to find out more about their work and see if there's a rat you might want to adopt or otherwise support their efforts. The website is Apopo, A-P-O-P-O, which I guess was originally like a Dutch acronym. Is that, do I have that correct?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Stands for Anti-Personnel Mine Product Development.
Well, that's, I guess that's the translation it's become. But it's a POPO, APOPO.org. And again, it's a very deep, rich, thorough website with just tons of great information and resources. And of course, photos of the rats and some of the work that's done and the trainings. Great website to visit. And again, you may decide upon hearing this interview that you'd like to help support their work or adopt a rat or otherwise get involved. So we've been speaking with Christoph Cox, and the co-founder and CEO of Apopo. And Christoph, thank you so much for making the time to join us on Talking Animals, and good luck as you get into your 20th anniversary and beyond, and best wishes for the holidays.
Thank you so much for your kind interest in our work and bringing our work to the public. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. My thanks again to Christoph Cox and his colleagues at Apopo. In a few moments, I'll be playing a animal song that we pulled from the Talking Animals vaults. But right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner, where we'll be hearing a piece from Dana Gould, one of my huge, longtime favorites. He has a new comedy album out called Mr. Funny Man, and we're going to hear a long, nice, wonderful piece from it entitled Chimps, Bears, and JFK. This is Dana Gould in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Funny story about the Kennedy assassination. When they did his autopsy, they lost his brain. That's not apocryphal. Google it. The theory is the family took it and buried it privately, but I prefer to think that for the next 10 years, whoever was president, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, the first thing that happened after they were elected, where they were whisked into the basement of the CIA, where they met a very important chimp. With a big Frankenstein scar across the top of their forehead. Mr. President, I can't balance the budget and maintain troop levels in Vietnam. That's because you have two major expenditures and no increase in the tax base. I gotta figure out how to get the civil rights bill through the Senate, then I'm gonna go have some raisins and go swing on that tire. Is my butt red? My butt feels swollen and red. Chimpanzees, for the record, horrible animals. If you ever read a newspaper story about somebody who gets attacked by a chimpanzee, the wounds are always horrific. And they're always the same. Because chimpanzees are born with this thing called an attack protocol. Chimpanzees are born knowing how to kill you. The first thing a chimpanzee does when it attacks you, and I'm gonna tell you, so you know, they say when a bear attacks you, you're supposed to make yourself look as physically imposing as you possibly can and speak very soothingly. The trial and error that went into figuring that out is written in the blood of campers. You know, bear, mersey dotes and dozy dotes and little amsy divey. Don't sing pop songs from the 30s. Bring in that guy that collects old board games. Let's see how that works. But bears are so stupid. Bears think we all walk around with it in our pants. Because everyone they've ever caught well, we're 12 for 12, you tell me. Let's just eat the top half and get the fuck out of here, I guess. Now you know why I don't tell them we speak English. What the hell do I have to say to a guy with his pants? I have to say, as a fellow bear, you're really overthinking this. The first thing a chimpanzee does when it attacks you is it breaks your jaw so you can't bite it. Then he chews your hands off so you can't claw it. And then he tears your genitals off. I guess. So you won't rape it. Chimpanzees are so full of themselves. They actually think that even after they've broken your jaw and chewed off your hands, you're still going to be dying to tear off a slice. Like, are there guys chasing them across the floor of the jungle? Hey, please, please, hey, slow down. Where are you going? You're so beautiful. Please. No, I'll go to the hospital in a minute. Let's just take care of it. Look, you came down out of the tree. Clearly you wanted it. That's a question. There's a little matter of some chimpanzee sugar that I'd like to partake of, and then I'll go to the doctor.
That was Dana Gould with a piece called Chimps, Bears, and JFK, taken from his new CD, Mr. Funny Man. Okay, on to an animal song I've taken from the vaults of the second Talking Animals Festival some years back now. This is the wonderful Loris Vidal with his version of Queen Bee on Talking Animals.
She's my queen bee. Oh, oh, oh. She loves me to my soul. Ah, oh, she rocked me to my soul, my baby, baby, baby. She loves me to my soul. Oh, she locked me to my soul. Well, baby, won't you come by me? I own you like greed. Baby, won't you come by me? I know you'll agree, 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 agree. Oh, you love me to my soul. Oh, you love me to my soul. Oh, she rock me to my soul. Mm-hmm, to my soul. Well, she's a strutter, she can shake his son. She'll dance and she'll have her fun. She's a shot, she can shake his son. Oh, she'll dance and having fun. But baby, 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 she love me to my soul. She rock me to my soul. She love me to my soul. To my soul. For lovers, These songs were made for lovers. Lovers and lovers and lovers and lovers and love. Lovers and lovers and lovers and lovers and love. Lovers and lovers and lovers and lovers and love. Lovers and lovers and lovers. Sweeter than a honeybee. Oh, my baby been sweet on me. Sweeter than a honeybee. Oh, she's my queen bee. Oh, she rocked me to my soul. Oh, she loved me to my soul. She rocked me to my soul. Oh, to my soul. Everybody.
Thank you. That's Loris Vidal, the fabulous Loris Vidal, doing Queen Bee on stage at the Talking Animals Festival a few years back. Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori in Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including in the noon hour, Midpoint with Nola Lillet. Then at 1 p.m., Craig Kopp and John Gilmore preside over executive session. Meanwhile, on this show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering a new edition of the Talking Animals t-shirt. Right now, since we didn't get to any animal news or announcements last week with our animal Christmas song special, let me hit a couple of quick items here of interest in one way or another, including a Dateline Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh City Council recently passed an ordinance limiting tools that can be used to care for exotic animals. A lot of it impacts the way the Pittsburgh Zoo PPG Aquarium cares for its animals. The bill, which passed by a vote of 6-3, regulates how exotic animals are cared for in the city, banning the use of prods, whips, muzzles, or any other device that could cause pain to animals. Pittsburgh Zoo officials have criticized the bill, saying city council does not know enough about the animals to regulate their care. All right. Also, this was on the front page of the Tampa Bay Times last week. Headline, Advocates Make Orca Pledge a Law. And I'll just read a little bit of its byline by Tracy McManus, Times staff writer. The announcement was rolled out to the world as a pledge, a promise. In March 2016, SeaWorld declared it would end killer whale breeding, making the orcas in its care in the United States and abroad its last generation to live in captivity. Later that year, California passed a law solidifying the change, banning breeding, performing, and introduction of any new orcas into captivity in the state. Now advocates in Florida, home of SeaWorld's global headquarters, are pushing for the same legal protection, fearful that quote-unquote corporate policy can always change, said Animal Legal Defense Fund attorney Lindsay Laris. Representative Ben Diamond drafted the Florida Orca Protection Act ahead of the 2018 legislative session, but said he is still debating whether it will be one of the six bills he is limited to filing. With SeaWorld in rebuild mode after years of decline and plummeting attendance, Lara said there's an urgency to protect orcas in Florida amid the unpredictability of a struggling publicly held company. But in a recent transaction that occurred across the Atlantic, done with no public announcement or fanfare, it appears SeaWorld has already acted against its own policy, the Tampa Bay Times has found. So if you didn't already see that, you may want to research that, find it online, and read more. And speaking of aquatic-oriented creatures, this was a while back I saw, but just wanted to mention, read this again. This is from a piece in the New York Times by Steph Yin. Keeping track of dolphins is a slippery, patchy process. First, you must procure time on a ship or aircraft, which is expensive. After that, what you see depends on uncontrollable factors like weather, ocean conditions, and whether the creatures happen to be hanging out at the sea's surface. As an alternative, researchers have tried deploying underwater sensors to eavesdrop on the clicks dolphins use for echolocation, which can give clues about the aquatic mammal's numbers, distributions, and behaviors. Sifting through all these data, however, becomes a new headache. A machine learning program, similar to the one that recommends new Facebook friends, you may be able to help. In a study published recently, PLOS Computational Biology, scientists from the Scripps Institution of Oceanography in California introduced an algorithm that was able to analyze 52 million dolphin clicks and identify seven distinct groups of sound. These click types, the authors speculate, may correspond to different kinds of dolphins. goes on from there. You may want to track that down, but it sounds really interesting and a huge advance in trying to understand our dolphin friends. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. And there will be a prize, a new Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who emails. Please don't call today. Please email Duncan at WNF.org. And the first person who does so correctly identifying this animal song will get that t-shirt. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Relates to our earlier conversation with Christoph, of course. Can you name that animal tune? We gave you plenty of it to work with. Hope so. Again, just email us at Duncan at WNF. First person to do so gets a brand new Talking Animals t-shirt. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. Rob Laura is up next with Radioactivity. I'll be back next week with another edition of the show. Meanwhile, please visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow me on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our email newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other scintillating news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. As usual, we're closing out today's show with an animal song, although in this case, it's an instrumental animal song. It's Booker T with his version of Tom Waits' Get Behind the Mule on Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachi, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio. Handpicked music and news. Thanks for listening. Speak again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.